Yes, recording is still on.
Thank you. And thank you, Manny. So where we left off before the interruption was on item number two. Were there any other public comments on item number two, Cheryl?
No other comments under item two.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we'll move on to item number three, which is the recommendation of the adoption of a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Entrada South Valencia Commerce Center project. Presenting are Mr. Byrne and Rick Vasilopoulos. If you guys are ready, please let me know.
Given the technical difficulties we had, I asked Rick to drive over. He was in our other office. He should be here in a few minutes. If we could defer the presentation until he arrives, I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
I can give the Director of Water Resources report in the meantime, if you'd like.
All right. Why don't we do that? So note that we'll be moving to item number four, which is the Water Resources Director's report and staff activities. So, Dirk, when you're ready.
Yeah. A few things to cover. Last week, we received an email from DWR indicating that our urban water management plan for 2020 was deemed to be compliant with the Urban Water Management Plan Act. So, what we anticipated, but certainly good to hear from DWR and hear it a little bit earlier than we typically do. They did note some items that they wanted to have clarified, but indicated that those could be handled in an errata. And so over the next weeks, we'll be preparing that and submitting it to DWR and updating our documents that are online. So a big thank you to the Kennedy Jenks team who helped prepare the document, but in particular to Sarah Fleury, who put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into getting this document in shape and handling all the public presentations and so forth. So, like I said, good news to hear from DWR. Also, we've gotten the final version of the salt and nutrient management plan update from the consultant. We will be submitting that to the regional board in the coming weeks. And so it was nice to be able to click that one off. And Ernest Delvise, because was our project manager on that, and he deserves an award of fortitude and sticking with this thing, getting the consultant to get a work product that was compliant with the act. So wanted to commit those to you. The third thing I wanted to mention was an update. Okay. That work group is seeing the effort to restore the flows in Bouquet Creek. The work group, which is made up of ourselves, various local sponsors, being the LA County Public Works, California Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Army Corps of Engineers. and a few other miscellaneous parties, and also has representation from local elected officials. The news there was that Public Works and the county, or and the Department of Fish and Game, met with the staff from the Conservation Board about our pre-grant application. And while Conservation Board staff was somewhat surprised by the price tag that's associated with the planning for this effort, which is getting up to be in the $9 million range, they nonetheless seem to continue to be supportive of the grant. They are taking the information to their management group and will be getting back to us. Local stakeholders are also in the process of getting support letters lined up to send to state officials. In addition, SCV Water, SCV GSA, and the local integrated water management group sent a letter to our federal elected officials requesting that they support a $2 million community development grant to supplement supplement what would be the grant from the Conservation Board. A representative, Mike Garcia, has already sent a letter to California Fish and Wildlife indicating his office support for the project. Other stakeholders are have been invited to use our letter as a template to also request federal participation in the project. So, and I should say that that Steve was our representative at this last meeting, and he's been the driving force in getting those letters out to our federal representatives. So with that, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Dirk. Questions from the public on item 4 and 4.1?
Do not appear to be questions.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from member of the committee for Dirk on item 4. Director Cooper.
Dirk, I want to thank you and thank your staff for the salt nutrient management plan, the Bokeh Creek, with getting our plan approved in the state, those are huge issues that have been, we've had for some time, and I really appreciate the work they've done. So thank you. Thank you. Steve, thank you.
Other questions for staff and for? Quick question. The urban water management plan, that's great news, especially it's relevant tonight, the fact that we'll be using it for the WASA item number 3. One question I had on Bokeh Creek, Dirk, you mentioned the Conservation Board. Is that regional board or who is that?
The California Conservation Board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Forest Service, speaking of federal involvement, has the Forest Service in any way recommended support and talked to the feds?
Yeah, this meeting, they were indicating that they thought there was the federal, a new federal equivalent to a categorical exemption might be applicable for this project. They call it something slightly different, though.
It's a categorical exclusion.
Exclusion, that's it.
Which is good news. It is
good news, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, nonetheless, thinks that a biologic opinion will be necessary, and Public Works said that they would support that effort since they're coordinating the other environmental work on the project.
That's good news all the way around. Thank you, gentlemen, and make sure you give the good news to Director Atkins, as he's not with us tonight, but he will warm the cockles of his heart, I'm sure. So thanks for all the updates. All great news. Appreciate it. And with that, we move back to item number three, which is the recommendation on the adoption of a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Entrada South and Valencia Commerce Center project. Mr. Byrne and Mr. Vassalopoulos presenting. So when you gentlemen are ready, go ahead, please. Thank you.
Do we have Joe? Okay. And everything works as far as we know. All right. Thank you, Chair Ford. Good evening, committee members. I'm Rick Vassalopoulos, water resources planner, and I'm here to discuss the water supply assessment for the Entrada and Valencia Commerce Center. Joe's going to first present a legal overview of water supply planning, and then I'll continue with the presentation. Next slide. So then I'll go over the WASA process, the project and its water demands, our water supplies, the risks to our water supply, our historical operations, the supply and demand comparisons, and our recommendations. So with that, next slide, and Joe will take over for a little bit.
Thank you, Rick. Good evening, everybody. Chair, is it possible to share screen or for you to put the... want to make sure that I'm looking at the same thing that everyone's looking at.
Are you looking at a screen that says water supply planning?
No, it just shows everybody. You know what? Given how we've been trying to make sure we got our audio here. Oh, there we go. There it comes up. Okay, I'm nervous to mess with it. I could certainly just follow along. I can kind of see behind Rick, and I've got it here in front of me as well. So why don't we just do that? Okay. So the first slide here is, again, and this is, I think, primarily an effort to provide some background and overview of some of the concepts that are coming into play and have obviously been in play for some time. But in particular, given the number of WSAs that are coming to the board, there have been a number of questions and requests for a discussion on some of the basic obligations of the agency and basic duties of the agency. So during the presentation here, I've got just a few slides as an introduction on this WSA item. It will be talking about the basic kind of duty to serve of the agency. We don't need to do too much about the urban water management plan, but it is foundational to the kind of water supply planning and the other aspects of water supply planning that the agency engages in. We'll talk about water supply assessments, water verifications, and then the concept of bill serve letters. Next slide. Okay, just want to make sure I'm looking at the same thing. So the basic question, I think, which everyone is aware of, is the agency's duty to serve, its obligation to provide its customers with water. SCV Water, as it indicates here, is a special act agency, and part of our purpose articulated is provide water at a reasonable cost in a sustainable manner. The basic concept is that if we have water that's available, we're obligated to provide it within our service area upon request. And that is subject to reasonable rules and regulations. Now, the primary exception to that is in a water emergency situation. And that usually is pursuant to Water Code Section 350. And that is a declaration of an emergency. And in some stages, which we have in our ordinance, I think it's at level 4, there can be a moratorium on new service. There are some agencies that have different water supply situations than we do that have been in a water service emergency or declared emergency for many years and have had that as a mechanism for them to ultimately require people who are looking to develop to potentially bring their own source of water to the table because they made a determination that there's a threat to existing supplies in emergency capacity. So next slide. Now this concept is somewhat debated, but there's, I think, general consensus that part of our obligation as purpose of the agency is to provide water in a sustainable and reasonable cost, and that there is a duty to augment existing supplies. The caveat that with that is that it's within the discretion of the board and the agencies in how they develop those supplies. So you don't have to say yes to every single idea to develop new supplies, but the concept of trying to provide water to those within your service territory and making reasonable efforts to do so is one that is imposed upon agencies. Again, as it indicates here in the second bullet, efforts to develop new supplies must be reasonable and within the scope of their mandate. And again, that is where there is some considerable discretion that comes to the board in how they decide to do that. Lastly, on this slide, it is important to note that just because you're within the service area does not mean that you have an absolute right to receive water service. It depends on whether there is sufficient supply or not. And absent a firm commitment, there is no essentially kind of property right. Next slide. Now, I don't think we need to go too much into urban water management plans, but again, it is the foundational document for water supply planning. It's the document of which water supply assessments and water verifications are primarily based. And just to reiterate what I think we all know as we went through the process recently, it's for long-term planning. It's done every 5 years. And it has various types of years and scenarios and projections. And that is the foundation for how we plan and make determinations of whether water is available or not as we get into some of these next steps, which are the water supply assessments. One thing to note, yeah, they can be challenged in court, which I think we made everyone aware of at the last, when we went through the process. Next slide, Cheryl. Okay, water supply assessments. And Rick is going to speak more about this as we get deeper into this specific project. They're intended to better link land use decision-making and water supply availability, increase communication and coordination between water supplier and the land use agency. SB 221, which was passed probably back in 2001 or 2002, this applies to certain size developments. Rick has, I think, walked us through this process a number of times. Residential developments of over 500 units or its equivalent and a few other kind of criteria will qualify you for this. There are project-specific analysis that are part of the CEQA process. And we get, as you know, a specific request from the city or the county, whatever the land use agency is. Next slide. And we have a certain amount of time in which to respond. And that is 90 days. We're entitled to have some extensions. One question that's come up is, you know, are we obligated to adopt a water supply assessment? And the answer is that we are. The real discretion is in what we say in it. In the county or the city actually can take us to court and sue us and require us to adopt one. And if we don't, then we would be subject to court order, potentially paying attorney's fees and costs, et cetera. The question that needs to be answered in a water supply assessment is there in the first bullet. And that's what the projected supplies available during the different types of water years will meet the demand of the project over a 20-year planning horizon, in addition to existing and planned future uses. So the answer to that is either we have sufficient water supply, and here's why. Usually the urban water management plan is leaned on heavily. And the other answer to that is that, I'm going to go to the next slide on that. It must be, answer to that would be that it's insufficient. And I'll get to that next slide. But if it is insufficient or sufficient, they both need to be supported by substantial evidence. And that's why the water supply assessment has to, all the backup information that's in it. And again, it does lean pretty heavily on urban water management plan. All right, Cheryl, next slide. Okay, here's where I was going before I was a little overeager. Again, there's, you could say, one, you have sufficient supplies, you make the case for why, and you map it out. And the other is that you say you have insufficient supplies. And the actual quote from the Water Code is that if the water supplier concludes that the water supplies are or will be insufficient, the water supplier, quote, shall provide to the city or county its plans for acquiring additional water supplies, setting forth the measures that are being undertaken to acquire and develop those supplies. So if we say we have insufficient, then we have to outline a plan as to how we're going to acquire those additional supplies. And what you outline does not need to be set in stone. There is discretion in the board as to how it does it, but that is a specific requirement in the Water Supply Assessment Act. A water supply assessment, lastly, is not subject to direct legal challenge. It's incorporated into the CEQA action that's taken by the lead agency. Next slide, Cheryl. So
one more, Cheryl.
Yeah, I want to make sure that I'm on the right one. Sorry. Oh, you've got it up here. Okay, good. I was going off of my copy. Okay, so the water verification is kind of the last step. And the difference between a water supply assessment and water verification primarily is that it's later in the process and it's required as part of an approval. To get a tentative map approved or a development agreement approved. It also has kind of similar criteria for what qualifies for water verification, meaning size of project, amount of water use that's projected, et cetera. Next slide, Cheryl. And I think this is an important point. So the key difference between a water supply assessment and a water verification, which is later in the process, is that the plans and estimates developed in the WHA statute which are, quote, like I said, plans and estimates are replaced with, quote, firm assurances of supply. So you have to really make a showing. That's the final where the agency says, we have the water, and you have to be able to demonstrate that. And they're not part of the CEQA process, and that is something that is and can be challenged independently. Next slide, Cheryl. And lastly, the practice on these varies, but we'll serve letters. Typically, before a city or county approves development, it'll require them to obtain a will serve letter to show that there's water for the project. And this is usually done for projects that are not qualifying for a water supply assessment or water verification. The typical form is that it has a representation that the proposed development is within a service area. And if the developer meets certain conditions, pays fees, et cetera, that water service will be available. It's not normally a contract. Our forms that we use are not binding, and we say that very clearly. They're usually for a specific amount of time. However, there is some precedent for them being binding in cases where the water suppliers have made assertions and been very specific about their intent to provide water. And the will serve letter is something that, it's not a lot of law on it, and it is utilized by planning agencies, oftentimes at different points in the process, usually pretty early on. Again, the water verification and water supply assessments apply to the larger projects. And that's it for next slide, Chair. That's it for my overview of the kind of basic water supply legal concepts.
Thanks, Joe.
Back to you, Rick.
So a lot of this we've seen before, but we'll do this again. Do a quick rundown of the SB 610 water supply assessment process. The project application is sent to the lead agency, who then determines whether the project is subject to CEQA and SB 610 requirements. In this case, the project includes over 500 residential units, as well as numerous commercial properties, so they meet the requirements. The project's water supplier is then notified that a water supply assessment is necessary, and they have 90 days to comply. The supplier analyzes the project's water demand and prepares the water supply assessment using the urban water management plan to support it. And then the board of directors will then determine if the supplies are sufficient and sends the assessment to the lead agency. Next slide. So the main requirements of the water supply assessment are to analyze the project's water demand, quantify the water supply for prior years, show that the 20-year projected supply will meet demand in all year categories with future supplies included, and lastly, the board shall approve the water supply at a regular or special board meeting per Water Code Section 10910 and must send it to the lead agency within the required time period. Next slide, April. April, Cheryl. I'm used to saying April, sorry. So the project description is also required by the water supply assessment. The Entrada South project is planned to be developed on approximately 440 acres, all within the SCV's water service area. And the project consists of 371 multifamily detached residential units, 894 multifamily attached residential units, 309 mixed-use attached residential units, 582,000 square feet of mixed-use commercial, a 100-room hotel room, 100-room hotel, and an elementary school, as well as about 310 acres of recreational, arterial, and open spaces. Next slide, Cheryl. And then the Valencia Commerce Center is also planned to be on approximately 330 acres within SCV's service area and will consist of about 2.9 million square feet of mixed-use office development, about 500,000 square feet of commercial retail and business park, 41 acres of irrigated slopes, and about 168 acres of open space. Next slide. Entrada South is located on the west side of the old road between Valencia Boulevard and Magic Mountain Parkway, just beyond Six Flags Magic Mountain. And then the Valencia Commerce Center is located on the west side of the old road between Highway 126 and Commerce Center Drive. Next slide. The projected water demands for the project were calculated using the same methods that we used to calculate future water demand in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. In an average year, demands are projected to be 1,411 acre feet per year, while the demands increase to 1,496 acre feet per year in a single dry year and 1,439 acre feet in multiple dry years. This project was included in the One Valley, One Vision General Plan, and the demands for the project were incorporated into the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. But due to small changes in development, the demands decreased by approximately 511 acre feet per year compared to the Urban Water Management Plan. Next slide, Sean. So one thing that differs between this water supply assessment and the ones that we had brought to the board last month is that this project has a recycled water component. The indoor water use from these projects can be delivered to the water reclamation plants and distributed back for their irrigation needs. So the recycled water from these projects will lower the actual potable water demand by about 552 acre feet per year. Although there's a remaining 112 acre feet per year that will have to be made up from either other recycled water sources or from potable supplies. For this analysis, we assumed that the makeup water would be potable. This resulted in a total potable demand of 858 acre feet. Next slide. So now I'll discuss our available and anticipated water supplies and our approach in updating the supply projections using the most recent information we have. As the project's assessment relied upon both the current and future water supplies of SCB Water, we've modified the supply portfolio from the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan to reflect current conditions by utilizing DWR's 2021 draft capability report and modifying the schedule for recovery of our wells impacted by contamination. Next slide. In our analysis, we used the more recent 2021 draft state water capability report that came out at the end of last year. It uses the updated CalSIM 3 model assumptions with a longer hydrologic record compared to the CalSIM 2 assumptions that were used in their 2019 report. The draft report indicated the state water project reliability will be reduced from 58% down to 56% in average years, and from 7% to 5% in single dry years. We use these updated percentages in our supply analysis for the water supply assessment. And then these changes resulted in minor modifications to our reliability tables. Next slide. So then the schedule for the return of both the Saugus and alluvial well supplies were also modified to reflect current conditions. The two Saugus wells will now be online in 2024, where they were supposed to be back on in 2022. Due to some additional treatments and designs that took a little longer, that are taking a little longer. And our PFAS impacted alluvial wells will be returning to service, adding 15,000 acre feet or so by 2025. And an additional 6,400 acre feet per year by 2030. And these changes were also, resulted in minor modifications to our reliability tables. Next slide. So taking these modifications into account, we've adjusted our current water supply portfolio for the water supply assessment. The adjusted supply is reflected in this table and consists of our state water project table A water, our alluvium and Saugus groundwater, our semi-tropic and Rosedale Rio Bravo banking programs, and two water exchanges with AVAC and United Water. We also include our Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo transfer agreement water, Yuba cord water, and our current recycled water. Next slide. So we've also planned for future supplies, and this table references those supplies. They include our recovered Saugus 201 and 205 wells, six new Saugus wells, and our recovered alluvial wells, as well as our phase two recycled water projects and Five Points Westside community recycled water. We also include an additional extraction from our Rosedale Rio Bravo banking program and Newhall Land and Farm semi-tropic banking amount and their nickel water. Next slide. So planning for water supplies also involves managing risks and uncertainties. Changes in public policy, regulatory requirements, and advancements of scientific knowledge can all affect future water supplies. In the water supply assessment, we looked at many of these risks, but specifically looked at water quality, climate change, and how ongoing development of new water use efficiencies impacted water supplies and demand. For groundwater quality issues we looked at were impacts due to PFAS and perchlorate in existing wells and permitting new wells. The approach we took for water supply assessment was consistent with the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan in that we assessed the historical and current conditions of our groundwater, looked at treatment methods and how these affected the scheduling, as well as documenting the necessary permitting paths for new wells. Next slide. When it came to climate change, the water supply assessment restructured the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan information to provide additional texts to the water supply assessment. And as water demand is anticipated to increase by 3.7% by 2050, we've based the modeling of our groundwater supplies to include these increases. Finally, we considered the State Water Project Reliability Delivery Capability Report that incorporated a sea level rise of 45 centimeters by 2050. Next slide. So the ongoing development of new water use efficiencies may lead to updates in water conservation regulations. These could potentially reduce indoor water use to 42 gallons per capita per day from the current 50 gallons per capita per day, and potential regulations to mandate irrigation water efficiency for landscaping could reduce outdoor water use. The gains due to irrigation efficiencies should more than offset the reduced recycled water available in this situation. Next slide. So another SB 610 requirement is for us to show our historical water supply. This graph shows our imported deliveries and our groundwater production over the last 10 years. Over this time period, SCV water demonstrated an ability to conjunctively use its imported surface water and groundwater, along with recycled water and conservation, to meet water demands facing the dual challenges of severe drought and restricted groundwater supply. Next slide. State Bill 610 also requires us to perform a water balance analysis for normal years, single dry years, and multiple dry years. We've done this for preparing a series of tables that show all existing and planned supplies and comparing them to our existing and projected demands. Next slide. The summary table shows that our projected water supply is sufficient to meet water demands for normal, single dry, and multi-dry years through 2050. The water demand for the Entrada and Valencia Commerce Center projects is included in these calculations. Next slide. So in conclusion, our conclusions, staff has evaluated the long-term water demands and has compared these against these needs against existing and planned water supplies. Demand projections were based on population projections, county and city land use plans, both active and passive conservation, and climate change impacts. The water supply assessment concluded that the total projected water supplies over the 30-year projection period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Entrada South Valencia Commerce Center project, as well as existing and planned future uses. Next slide. That being said, staff recommends that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommend that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Entrada South Valencia Commerce Center project and direct staff to submit the water supply assessment to the County of Los Angeles. Next slide, and that's it. Questions?
Thank you, Rick, and thank you, Joe. We'll start with public comments on item number three. I think members of the committee, you have a letter at the desk from Five Point, signed by Matt Carpenter, their Vice President of Environmental Resources, urging support for the approval of the water supply assessment. And we also have a speaker's card from Mrs. Noltemeyer to speak on this item. So Mrs. Noltemeyer, when you are ready, please come forward.
Well, all we can say is that if you vote for this, we won't vote for you. But also that I read through this. I looked at it, all of it. A lot of you should be questioning a lot of it. I don't know if you're going to or not. You should have done that before you asked me, I guess. But this does seems to be something that they're pushing through right before months, just months before we'll be down to nine and elected officials. I think this should be put off till we have elected officials. That's not that many months. They've waited this long. This has been on the books for years. So 9 months, whatever it is to the, we have an elected base up here, somebody that's representing the people here, just not a developer that has hired somebody to rush this through for them. Just doesn't appear to be a very proper action for you at this point. If we didn't have that demand, and that demand was made that you have an election, and then to see this type of thing coming forward, like this one was, is very disturbing. How many years have they waited? Then all of a sudden has to be pushed into the last few months that we have a non-elected body putting this onto the weight of the people of this whole community? That doesn't seem fair to me. And I can make it as simple as possible. If you vote for this, don't expect us to ever vote for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miltemeyer. Just for the record, 4 of the 5 people on this committee are elected, and 10 of the 11 members of the board are all elected. So they are elected by the people. And with that, Cheryl, any comments from folks online?
There are no online comments.
Okay. Then with that, we can begin questions and comments for staff from members of the committee. Director Colley.
Thank you. So I first want to make a comment that the 9 months till the election and 90 days that we're required to respond to this, if any member of the public feels like the legislature got it wrong and that we ought to be able to wait 9 months, then probably ought to go to the legislature to get that fixed. That's not something we can do. We're obligated by law, by decisions made by the state legislature, to get this done within 90 days, which is roughly 3 months, not 9 months. Anyway, so first question I had, is this the recycled water for this project part of a new drop program? Is that in the, and I've got like 15 layers of, and I've tried to figure out a way to
see around that.
So I can sort of see you. I know who you are. So you can nod your head. Yes or no.
Gotcha. Steve, is this part of the, I believe it's part of the new drop.
Yeah. Yes. That's how we're pursuing the analysis for this one. I think that's the kind of the most conservative approach at this point, to use the new drop,
thoughts program
approach okay. to analyze this one. As the board knows, we are continuing to evaluate being able to kind of pull water out of the river as well, but that takes a lot for a further study. But for this analysis, we are using the new drop approach.
Okay. And next question related to recycled water. How much of the infrastructure, how much new infrastructure will we need to build in order to serve this? And how much will the developer include as the non-backbone system?
So the developer is putting in all of the local distribution system. I don't know if this project might cause us to have to put an additional pump in at our pumping plant at the Valencia Center. But other than that, the infrastructure is in.
Okay, so we have the backbone pipe to serve it. Okay. I should have written my questions down because I have one more, but let me go to somebody else and then I'll come back because I think I can remember it here in a minute.
Director Orzechowski.
All right, I have a question on slide 23. Cheryl, can you go on to slide number 23? And thank you, Mr. Vassilopoulos, for the presentation, and Mr. Byrne for legal intro. Right. Yeah. Okay. Do we have it? This is regarding the current supply portfolio. Alluvium is listed at 15,000 to 16,000, and SOGS is listed at 7,500 to 15,000. Is that the numbers as of April of this year? The range. I mean, the numbers that were presented for the April had very specific numbers.
Yes, those ranges are the current ranges as of this spring. I think what we're experiencing right now, I think we're talking about getting 12,000 or so out of the SOGAS. I have to look at the operating plan to get actual alluvial production.
I think last time it was 12,500.
Yeah.
April numbers are 10,500. Okay.
So,
and I imagine the numbers used were the conservative numbers. Is that correct?
Yes.
So on all these ranges, the lower range was used for the analysis.
I think the ranges you see there have to do with whether it's a wet year or a dry year.
Oh, right. So let me rephrase.
So actually all of them, I think all of them, the range is in there. It's if it's a dry year, we use one number. If it's a single dry year, we use one. If it's a normal year, we use one number. So the numbers would change depending on the type of year that we were evaluating.
The type of year, and then also as we move in through time, for instance, the SOGAS, we use less capacity from the existing wells because we have additional new wells to draw on. So that's one reason you see the SOGAS at a lower number there.
Okay, all right, understood. So we're anticipating the future wells that are already on the plan to be operational for that particular year, for that particular analysis, like 2025, 2030, and so on. Is that right?
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And just one comment, Chair. I definitely like Mr. Byrne's exposition here, like intro to what's required of us. And I would really want something like that to accompany these analyses in the future as a request for your consideration. Okay. So for me, thank you.
Director Cooper.
Thank you, Chair Ford. It's funny, my questions were the same as Director Orzechowski's, except what we can pull out of the alluvium and the SOGAS is greater than the numbers that we see on here significantly, because we pulled 25,000 or 24,000 regularly out of the alluvium, I believe, don't we? And in the SOGAS, I think some of the Scalmanini Slade reports said that we could draw significantly more out of the SOGAS in those years.
These are the existing ones. Cheryl, if you go to the next slide, then when you add the previous numbers from the previous slide to these numbers, you'll end up with a total of 35 from the SOGAS.
Okay, these are the ones that we can add on as we rehab some of the wells that are out there.
Right. We have the wells, we get the treatment on the alluvial, we drill new SOGAS wells.
That's excellent. Thank you. Now I understand. Thank you.
Just to echo director's comments, those numbers are provided on page 60 of the board packet, page 3-25 on the assessment table 3-4. So thank you. Thank you, Director. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Director Crawley.
So I do recall my last question. You mentioned the nickel water. At what point should we be asking Five Points to release the nickel water to us, if that's the right terminology, as perhaps a condition of this, of these assessments? What progress are we making? I'm actually surprised that one of my fellow committee members didn't ask this question.
The settlement agreement that we entered into with Five Point requires that the nickel water be transferred to us at the approval of the last track map in the Five Point development. At that point in time, an assessment would be done to determine how much of the nickel water was needed to support the Five Point development. And they would be responsible for paying for those costs. And we would be responsible for paying for the nickel water that was above and beyond what was used in the Newall Ranch development. But I'm just giving you where things stand at this point in time, given that agreement.
So nickel water is not part of this particular set of projects.
No, it's one of the supplies that's identified to make the, to help in the balancing of the overall portfolio for the agency and act build out.
Will this project be part of that overall portfolio, or is it only what used to be called Newhall Ranch? Or is this part of Newhall Ranch? I guess
this is not part of Newhall Ranch.
This is not.
Correct.
So this would not be part of that balancing? Is that your understanding?
Yes, this would not be part of the balancing. And there's to the extent there is water left over that's not required for Newhall Ranch that we acquire, then that small supply would be available to this development and all of the other users in the valley.
Okay, I think that answers my question. Appreciate it. Thank you.
So just to be clear then, the agreement you spoke of with regard to this would be concurrent with the approval of the last track within the specific plan. And yeah, it's not, these two projects are outside of the specific plan. Another thing, I think Director Orzechowski's recommendation is a very good one. And at a minimum, we should have Joe fully employed at the next board meeting. I think definitely at that board meeting, we need to have him speak, assuming, of course, that we approve this item here tonight to move forward. But
yeah, so we do have two more of these probably monthly. Do you recommend that Joe does this at the committee as well, again, both times, or just at the board meetings?
I'll leave that to the committee, it's good to have a refresher every once in a while, but I think we understand at the committee level why.
I think an exposition like that at every single committee meeting is helpful, especially since this meetings are public. It may not have to be so many slides for us, but certainly a duplicate during the regular board meeting. I think it's necessary, especially the requirement to adopt a water supply assessment within 90 days. I think the board needs to know that, and the public needs to know that.
Well, I would suggest that, you know, single slide real quickly and staff could cover those legal requirements. I think hiring counsel to do that every meeting is a little silly and expensive.
I can have them pare down to one or two slides, and then I can just read them.
Yeah, and of course, we always have counsel available anyway if we have questions. But I think part of the reason that we got the briefing tonight, and the part of the reason this needs to go to the full board, is a request that I have made a couple of times for a review of our legal obligations. And so I appreciate staff having done that, but I don't want to hear it next. Twice is already enough. Thanks.
You could potentially put a summary in your staff report each time we come up for a WASA that, you know, this is what the law requires, and maybe an abbreviated version, just so everybody's reminded.
Okay.
My question also is, seems to be two projects. Admittedly, we have a single developer. They are moving forward at the same time, you know, but in the end, would there be two separate, would the county be approving two separate CEQA documents? And no, they basically repeat the...
No, they combined them. We asked that too with the county, and they wanted one water supply assessment because their CEQA documents will just be one document for both of these projects combined, is what we were told.
Okay. Then with that, my one question with regard to the two projects is that Ricky noted that there was a savings relative to our analysis and urban water management plan for the projects of 511 acre feet per year. How is that divided between the two?
The majority was changes in the Valencia Commerce Center from what we had assumed for the 2020 urban water management plan. They changed some of their building types that use less water. So they went from, They went from a business classification to a industrial classification. So they changed the classifications of which changed the water demands for those, or the water demands for those are different. So that, and the square footage changed. They also decreased some of their square footage in some of the buildings. And that's where they ended up getting that rather substantial decrease in water demand.
Is the Entrada South project consistent with our evaluation?
It did not change. We used the same methodology and the same, I think all of the unit counts and everything stayed basically the same. There might've been a little bit of shifting of their commercial, but it was minor.
Okay.
I think it was less than 20 acre. If I remember, it was like less than 20 acre feet per year that changed on that compared to that 511 or 512. 500 of that is from the Valencia Commerce Center, and there's like 15 or 20 from the Entrada.
A reduction of 15
yeah.
or 20.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. One thing I was going to say with regard to the water supply assessment, and I don't know the timing on how it was developed, but on page... in our packet, it's page 103, I think. It's page 3-68 of the water supply assessment. There's a paragraph that talks about the sanitation district and the lawsuits, and they say the case is ongoing, but I think those are settled. And I think that's to our benefit. You just double check. But if that's the, if it is in fact the cases that have finally been settled, that would.
I believe they have been, but I will double check.
Okay. And lastly, this is, I don't ask staff to make a change, but you know, this, this delivery report on behalf of the, this is just a personal peeve, I guess, but the delivery report says that they do an analysis and they say a potential sea level rise of 45 centimeters is what results in the reduction in the delivery capacity report for a state water project. When I look at the Alameda sea level gauge, it's less than 1 millimeter a year. So we're looking at a 500 year, in order to get 45 centimeters sea level rise, you're looking at 500 years. So nothing to be done here, but at some point you might want to ask DWR. Being a little conservative. In
that we just do what they say.
I know. I mean, we have no choice in that matter, but.
It is a conservative estimate that they use.
We'll build a seawall in 500 years. Anyway, with that, I think that's all my questions, Rick. Thank you. Good job. And so members of the committee, and I think about, I would move to send this on to the board, not on consent.
Oh, come on.
And it's like, we're all in agreement with that. So with that, well done. And thank you, Mr. Byrne, for joining us. And on to the full board.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There he is.
Thanks for driving over,
Rick. Yeah. So with that, we move on then to item five, since item four has been previously recovered. And this is the Sustainability Manager's Report from Matt Dickens. Item 5.1 is an update on conservation and performance. So Matt, when you are ready, please.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
Yep.
Carol, can you pull up the presentation?
You're not seeing it, Matt.
No, this, it's kind of similar to the way it was before. I'm seeing the Zoom screen. Okay, thank you, Chair Ford and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to see you all tonight. Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager, in my first presentation. It's been quite some time since we provided an update on water conservation program activity. Kind of looking at our standard conservation or our active, and we may call it our normal conservation programs, which of course we are persistently providing to our customers, whether we're in drought or not. And of course, though, we will see usually an uptick in participation during drought years, and particularly this year, since we have been transitioning away from the quarantine conditions associated with pandemic. So a little bit of opening up and being able to provide these services to our customers. But today we'll provide program updates through the fiscal year so far. So next slide, Cheryl. This presentation will look at two major components, our programmatic performance, and that's for our residential, our CII customers, as well as our landscape programs. And then we will look at some items that are up for consideration for program updates in the not too distant future. Next slide. Programmatic performance. Again, we offer a wide range, a robust, comprehensive list of programs to our commercial or residential, commercial, industrial, institutional, and dedicated irrigation or large landscape customers. Because we recognize that our customers have a wide range of preferences and water efficiency goals, and as well as opportunities. So next slide, Cheryl. All right, so this chart here, looking at residential programs, fiscal year to date, we're gonna look at activity this year for our various different programs compared to activity through April of fiscal year 2021. So the bottom part of the chart, though, well, let me start at the top. we have our two different years, and then we have our programs, which are home checkups, kits, our Water Smart workshops, smart controller rebates. We'll identify how many and how many zones have been converted to smart weather-based controllers, lawn replacement projects, number as well as square feet, pool cover rebates, our healthy and efficient landscape program rebates for irrigation efficiency upgrades, as well as customer notifications through our high consumption courtesy notices, our water savings opportunities, leak alert letters, and phone calls that we've been taking. And then we also track how many folks are viewing our how to save water at home videos that are posted on our website, as well as embedded in our workshop. So this year we can see home checkups is significantly higher than it was in the previous year when we only were limited to our virtual checkups. We've completed 592 residential home drought-ready checkups, as well as irrigation inspections and virtual inspections. That's compared to 17 the previous year, so quite a bit increase. Also, we have handed out and distributed about 683 home water efficiency kits. I believe I provided some to the members of the board at a meeting not too long ago as a demonstration on those types of products that we provide to help folks save water in their homes. The Water Smart workshops, that's a more of a do-it-yourself at home irrigation or home water efficiency assessment. Very comprehensive. Customers get a $20 credit to kind of do the activities on their own time and by themselves. We've seen about 261 of those workshops this year. Smart controller rebates are down a little bit, about 183, a little over 1,000, close to 1,100 stations converted. Lawn replacement projects are up so far, although in the last few weeks, we're starting to see the phones ring, the emails come in for lots of projects related to lawn replacement since we've launched the 2.0 version, as well as drought engagement materials start to soak into the community psyche. Pool cover rebates about on track at 19. Help rebates are up with 31 different types of rebates. The water notices to customers, engagement opportunities up to about 24,000. Different letters have been sent out, and notifications and calls. And then our how-to videos are up about 236 views this year. So a lot of focus on conservation, a lot of interest from the residential sector in our conservation programs. Next slide. Turning to our commercial, this we do incorporate for CII programs. We do look at multifamily, even though technically they're a residential customer, they're operated in a commercial kind of management paradigm where a single corporate or facility manager can approve hundreds of audits and checkups, and retrofits activities in a single approval. So they kind of are one of those customer classes that dance between residential and commercial paradigms from our perspective. But again, we have how many projects we've done this year, unit surveys, how many shower heads we installed compared to last year, kitchen aerator installations, bathroom aerator installations, toilet flappers, irrigation inspections, and HET rebates. Toilet rebates are down this year as we're working closely with our partners and our multifamily customers in the Valley to fast track some of those projects. But with the supply chain issues that occurred late last year and that are still kind of trickling through the current kind of the lay of the land, we're still seeing that there's just not the product availability. But we can see that across the board for the other components of our program, that we've had significant participation specifically for CII and multifamily apartments for these other programs. Next slide, please. And then our large landscape programs were also kind of quiet, although they're starting to pick up and there's a lot of new projects coming in specifically for turf conversion. Our team is working diligently to engage with HOAs, HOA managers, HOA boards and whatnot to really get the word out and to promote the conservation programs. There's a major effort on that side for the CII as well as the landscape contractor. But nonetheless, we can see that we've had a few smart controller rebates, about two for 530 different stations. These are very large controllers. There's two different controllers that control that many stations. And then we've seen three projects, about 12,859 square feet so far. But in talking with staff, I think that we have 10 to 15 projects that are coming on the radar. So certainly seeing an uptick in participation. Okay, next slide, Cheryl. Finally, in this brief analysis of conservation activity, we'll look at some program updates, things that are on the radar, either feasibility analysis or different efforts by my team to engage with the community on our standing conservation programs. Next slide. So a couple of updates. We first look at the conservation policy updates, AB 1668. Of course, with all the stuff that's happening, droughts and the flash drought conditions and activities from the executive orders from the governor and state water resource control board, emergency regulations, and our own activity of water shortage enactment, we are seeing still motion with DWR and state specific to the long-term conservation framework that's embedded in Assembly Bill 1668 and SB Senate Bill 606. Specifically, we're looking at commercial dedicated irrigation meter landscape area measurements. The state has provided us with landscape area measurements for our residential customers, in which we work very closely to compare and contrast the data that we had and also to conduct feasibility assessments utilizing that landscape area measurement data. And we found some inconsistencies, and there were some nuance and minutiae in terms of their methodology, but we were able to land at a spot that we think is fairly accurate. However, as part of the framework, not only do we have to have indoor water usage, I think Rick mentioned here before, targets that will most likely be adjusting, and then the residential landscape area measurement piece, we also have our commercial DIM areas that we need to measure and understand and provide those urban water use objectives on an annual basis. We currently have one of our customer service areas has the majority of its commercial landscape measured, but for the other two, we do not have those. So we're working with other agencies and consultants to develop a streamlined methodology to try to get that data attached to that measurement data, the polygon data, that GIS information system data, and match it to our meter data so that we can accurately test and then also communicate that information as we move forward. Again, AB 1668, SB 606 are effective as of January 2024. So it's strange to say, but I think we're going to blink and it's going to be January 2024. So. And then regarding conservation planning updates, our current plan has been kind of an extension of the previous conservation planning mandates of 20% reduction in gallons per capita a day. We extended that to 2% per year as we work towards the framework. But as we get closer and once the methodologies are released, I imagine that it would be diligent of us and it would behoove us to consider the updating the water use efficiency strategic plan, understanding what those annual requirements are going to look like and what kind of opportunities we have in our customer inventory to accomplish those savings, what programs might help us accomplish that most cost-effective, efficient manner. However, those methodologies and standards have not been finalized or provided to us yet, so we're still working with the state. Today, I attended a four-hour meeting on the impacts of the indoor conservation standard reductions on wastewater treatment facilities and those types of issues. So lots of information still coming our way. And once we get that, we'd like to move to incorporate and update our plan to be prepared. Turning to conservation program updates, we have residential efficiency targets. One of the benefits of having the LAM data that was provided to us by the state and as customer care migrates or converts one of our customer service areas into their CIS system, the customer information system in Cuesta, we should be able to start looking at adding about 50% of our customers, maybe 45% of our residential customers into these efficiency targets. And then we'll need to look at the implementation, the communication, but then also consider how do we want to rebrand and re-implement or implement these programs to our customers going forward. So we should be able to start testing and integrating those systems this next fiscal year. For our healthy and efficient landscape programs, our lawn replacement program and efficiency, irrigation efficiency upgrades, our team, like I said, has been working, meeting with HOA management firms and landscape contractors and landscape designers and nurseries to develop supply chain as part of our logic model for the 2.0 lawn replacement program. So we're working on that. We have updated our online portal, which you can now with a few questions, you can estimate your rebate, whether you choose to go down the lawn replacement track or the irrigation efficiency track. Either way, you can kind of answer 10 questions on there. So there may be maybe a little more, about 10 questions, and you'll get a very close rebate estimate of what our programs would cover if you were to remove the lawn or to improve the irrigation efficiency. And then we're also developing new collateral material. So that project is moving forward. I think we'll probably be seeing an email blast here in the not too, or an email campaign, I should say, in the not too distant future. And then finally, I would conclude with pilot programs. You know, one of the things that we recently spent some time at the Home and Garden Show and met with a lot of customers. It was so great to see people out, but also a lot of new faces and a lot of interest in conservation and water. But one of the many discussions I had, a frequent discussion, was pertaining to hot water recirculating pumps. And we have in our standing water use efficiency strategic plan done a cost-effective analysis to determine how those devices work, what kind of rebates we might offer, and then what the cost-effectiveness of that program is, which is fairly good for the agency with about a 3.1 cost-effectiveness ratio. Anything over one is showing positive pro forma. But there is some, you know, in this case, we want to do some feasibility analysis. I've worked with these products for more than 20 years in various different water agencies and implementing programs. And I think we want to scan the program environment to determine the effectiveness, the utility, the qualitative components of customer acceptance and uptake, and then also, of course, the effectiveness and efficiency of these programs. So in this case, we want to look at conduct a feasibility analysis or an environmental scan to determine the smart practice approach to developing a pilot program for these products. So that's one of the things that we're looking into or turning our attention to once again. With that, I believe if we go to the next slide, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions from members of the public on item 5.1?
No, it does not appear so.
Okay. Questions from members of the committee for Matt Dickens on item 5.1. Director Cooper. Oh, I'm sorry. Director Colley.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Matt, I assume, did you see an email from me earlier today?
I did, Director Colley, and I was developing a response, but
okay.
Our four-hour meeting went very long.
I'm not. Okay, the last thing I wanted to do was ambush you with a whole bunch of technical crap at a meeting that you weren't prepared for. So I'm not trying to do that now. I didn't understand that bullet, of course, when I just saw it in a PowerPoint. That, if I understand now, we have not actually done a pilot program for hot water recirculating pumps, and we're just simply beginning to study it. Is that what you're telling me? Is that my right understanding?
That's correct, Director Colley. We've done some analysis for quite some time and have a lot of research available to us and scientific analysis of various different types of products. However, you know, with quite a bit of agencies now having conducted that program, and specifically as our customers are looking into having additional ways to save water, particularly in older homes, we're conducting a feasibility analysis to determine the smart practice approach towards an implementation or policy expression.
Okay. So I would ask, before anything gets too far down the road, it's something I would have an interest in very specifically, including some of the technical details. So I'm hoping that you would keep me in the loop if, you know, as you're going down that road, well before it gets to a pilot proposal. So, you know, I outlined in my email some of my technical concerns, and I would like to get some more data on that before we move forward. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley. I'll put together a response to your email, and certainly, with no pun intended, we'll certainly keep you in the loop.
Wow. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Other questions from directors? Director Rozowski?
Just a quick comment. Saw you at the Home and Garden Show on Saturday. You and Ms. Barden were answering questions from the public. Wanted to say hi, could not even get a warden. You and Kathy were busy answering questions, so I really appreciate that. Thank you. That's it for me.
Okay, thank you. Matt, I had one question. It looked like we, on irrigation controllers, smart irrigation controllers, that our numbers fell off a bit. Did you have any theories for that? And you may have said something, but I didn't recall you saying anything to it.
Yeah, Director Ford, thank you. Regarding the slight downturn in smart controllers, I don't have any scientific data to show why that dropped about 20%. But I do think that things are starting to pick up more, although there could be some saturation components and various different marketing components. So what we'll do is we'll continue to promote that program. It's a great program. A lot of folks are moving towards it. But one of the interesting things I think we'll see in the next presentation, too, is how much of our irrigation demands are following the weather very closely, which is just an anecdotal data point to suggest that there's a lot of weather-based controllers out there.
Okay, thank you, and a good presentation.
Thank you.
So if there's no other questions, we'll move on to item 5.2, which is the status of drought response and performance. And Matt, if you, once more, please.
Thank you, Chair Ford and members of the committee. Cheryl, if you could pull the presentation up. Yeah, perfect. Okay, well, let's dive into this month's about the drought status of drought response and performance. Next slide. We've streamlined this presentation typically to follow up with a supply assessment presentation, but certainly it has enough information to kind of connect the dots for local weather, larger drought conditions, local weather, and then also conservation or drought reduction, demand reduction performance. So this presentation will look at regulatory status across the state, activities that are on the radar, local activities as well, SCB water drought ready, demand performance from various different frames. And then we're not going to have a water shortage contingency plan status discussion. I believe that's a bugaboo that was left over from the previous presentation. So apologize for that. Next slide. Okay, go ahead, next slide. Regulatory status, as we've shared before, activity in the state, executive orders, emergency regulations, and emergency declarations from the governor and the State Water Resource Control Board date back to April 21 of last year. Although the conservation targets started in July of last year, LA County came into the fold of the emergency declaration in October. And then since then, there have been adoption of Since January 4th, the State Water Resource Control Board adopted emergency regulations similar to our water waste prohibitions and restrictions. And also the governor on March 28th issued Executive Order N-722, which, among other things, directed the State Water Resource Control Board to require agencies to adopt Stage 2 if they had a water shortage plan, and more prescriptive measures if they did not. So certainly there's a benefit to our agency by having that plan prepared, that we were able to deploy more regional specific and SCV specific measures, as opposed to the more restrictive measures that would be assigned by the state should we not have a plan. So some definitely some benefit there to have that local customization. And then this month, by May 25th, the State Water Resource Control Board will consider these emergency regulations. And they're also looking to consider defining non-functional turf. That's turf for non-functional turf is specific to commercial, industrial, institutional customers, as well as HOA common interest developments, at least in, as stated in the executive or in the initial draft of emergency regulations. But they would consider creating the definition and then also consider prohibiting the irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water. So a couple of things on the radar screen. We're working very closely with our public agency partners here in the Valley to monitor that, and then the staff will perhaps consider developing a response should once the next draft is provided. Turning to local water shortage contingency plan conservation activities, this the SCB Water Board of Directors on April 26th enacted Stage 2, which requires up to 20% voluntary conservation, restricts and prohibits water waste activities, and then also has other provisions, which I'll go over here shortly. Next slide, please. Turning to drought response and community leadership, let's look at some of the things that SCB Water is working on and how those activities align as defined in our water shortage contingency plan. Next slide. So the water shortage contingency plan has essentially six pillars of activities through each of the various different stages with specific measures and escalation, engagement and communication and restrictions or watering restrictions to accomplish various different savings through the stages, depending on and based on the agency's needs to implement such shortage activities. But these things include drought sustainable actions, which I think were well covered in the previous presentation. But there's other things that we're doing beyond conservation programs, including deploying supply augmentation. You know, the active conservation and passive conservation in our community, and the legacy work that we've done with the community and the conservation measures that the community's taken, coupled with smart strategic water supply management, has developed a robust portfolio of supply augmentation for us, which Sarah generally talks about through our banking programs and storage programs, as well as our diverse local and import supply opportunities in normal years. But then we also have drought programs. Those are programs that we specifically start to target and offer during drought, messaging and outreach engagement, and then restrictions and additional measures, all to accomplish at Stage 2 up to 20% conservation. Next slide. Thank you. Our drought programs focus on residential, landscape, commercial, but also through education, engagement, and behavioral education, I guess, to improve the water use ethic, achieve conservation through improved water efficiency, reduction of water waste, as well as deploying and employing these various different programs, which we offer on an annual basis and that I presented previously. Next slide, please. Our water waste restrictions are very, you know, these are all, these water waste measures are certainly a waste of water. They are somewhat common, but they're also really easy to correct. And so that includes allowing runoff, washing your cars without a hose nozzle, using water to wash down concrete, using a broom, watering during or up to 48 hours after measurable rain, using fountains without recirculating pumps, and watering turf on public medians, although most of the medians in the valley now are water-efficient landscape irrigated with point irrigation. So that may explain part of the reason why the non-functional turf is on the radar of the State Water Resource Control Board. And perhaps we'll see how that, again, how that definition comes up. Next slide. Stage two does have watering restrictions, and those watering restrictions are to 3 days per week, even odd address schedules, no more than 2 5-minute cycles, and then essentially watering in the morning or the evening. I know that the timing of day here is a little might spur a little confusion. And so we'll update that to talk about 12 a.m. to 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. to midnight. So midnight to 10 a.m. and midnight to 6 p.m. or midnight to 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. to midnight. We'll get that corrected so it's more clear. But nonetheless, customers are limited to 3 days per week, 2 5-minute cycles, and morning and afternoon watering to morning and evening watering to eliminate or reduce evaporation losses. Next slide, please. Okay, now let's turn to our SCV water demand performance. We'll look at conservation and drought response targets. Next slide, please. First, though, we want to set up a good understanding of how weather is impacting, as we mentioned before, a lot of our demands, particularly irrigation demands, are influenced by weather. So, you know, you have that inverse kind of relationship there. When it's dry, your demands increase. And when it's wet, your demands decrease if people are watering to the weather, particularly if a large section of the community is doing so. So evapotranspiration 2022 versus 2020, was for the month of April was up about 30.6%. So April was definitely a hotter month. Evapotranspiration is again known as ET. It's the amount of water that plants evaporate and transpire. So when ET is high, a lot of irrigation to maintain plants, usually based off a reference crop. And it kind of gives us a good idea of how much water to apply to our landscapes to avoid wilt or, or the plant not surviving. Year to date, kind of similar, it's up 30%. So it's been a very dry and warm first 4 months here this year locally. Precipitation, we saw 0.16 inches in April. But year to date, this is calendar year to date, that's January 1st through the end of April 30th, irrigation is down, or excuse me, precipitation is down 77% compared to the irrigation or the precipitation we received in 2020 for the same period. So both of those things tell us very, you know, a lot, point us in the right direction of what we're kind of looking for, which is that the precipitation and the benefit that provides to irrigation customers is non-existent, and the warm, dry temperatures that have occurred might push demands up, and we'll see how that pans out here shortly. Temperatures, max air average temperature for April 22 is about 4 degrees hotter than it was in April 2020. Next slide. This is a chart that shows us our interim conservation targets. The blue bars show us our monthly production. The dashed line shows us what our production would look like if we were using the 272 gallons per person per day. That was what 2010 baseline times today's population, and then broken out and distributed amongst the months. And then the dotted line shows us what essentially a 24% reduction of that 272 gallon per person per day with today's population. And so we see in January, our usage was below our target, above in February and March, but April fell back under. But year to date, we're up about 7.7% compared to our normal conservation target, or about 1,250 acre feet. Next slide, please. Turning to the 15% of 2020, a conservation target that Governor Newsom requested for all Californians to accomplish last July, we can see that the blue bar shows us our monthly production in 2020. The dashed line shows us the 15% of that blue bar, and then the brown bars show us our 2022 production. January, we were below 2020's levels, but we were nowhere near the 15% reduction. And then in February, March, and April, we started increasing compared to the 2020 drought baseline. But it's important to note that 2020 was a wet year. Again, in March and April, we know irrigation's down 77%. And in those early irrigation months, that precipitation provided demand or provided what would be needed to be supplemented through irrigation practices. And so without an absence of that, we're seeing customers increase that irrigation use. So that crater there creates a steep incline for us in those months if we don't have rainfall. So we'll see how that impacts our month-to-month accumulative targets here shortly. But so far this year, you were trending significantly above where we need to be versus 2020, as well as the 15% conservation target. Next slide. This chart shows us month-to-month. The blue line is the month of starting with from the left, January of 2021 versus January 2020, and then going all the way through April of 2022 versus April of 2020. So anything above 100% means it's over that same month in 2020. Anything below, it means that the usage for that month was below 2020. And the orange line is essentially our cumulative trend, but it resets in the shaded area, which again is July of last year when the governor requested all Californians to reduce by 15% of 2020's levels. So we started up in July, right there in the middle of the chart, about 5.6% over July of 2020. And then we saw conservation go down to about 97% there in December due to those October and December rains. Which is essentially a change of 8.6% in our conservation, cumulative conservation due to those early rains. But then in January, February, March, and April, we started trending upwards significantly as well as our cumulative. So our monthly in February was 7.8% over February 2020, 62% in March over 2020 this year, and then 47% in April. So those gains we had, which bottomed out in December of 3% below, are now back up to 5% above. So we're trending in positive territory here, which essentially tells me that we've saved cumulatively about 0.6% since July of last year. Next slide, please. And how does that compare to the state? Well, unfortunately, when I put this presentation together, February's numbers were still up on the website, but March's numbers have since been posted. and what we're seeing is that across the state, our usage, while it's significantly higher than the same month in 2020, I believe that that's pretty ubiquitous across the state. One article I'm showing here has March was statewide 18.9% over versus March 2020. With our region being significantly higher. So again, what we're trying to track here is just how does our valley savings compared to the South Coast region of which our system resides, and then also compared against statewide conservation. But it's important to note that there's a wide variability here in the state. You've certainly, even though we're in the South Coast, it's very difficult for us to look at our usage compared to, say, Santa Monica, who's going to have very different irrigation demand variability. But nonetheless, we look at all those different statistics and frames so that we have a good idea of whether or not we're anomalous beyond an acceptable range, or if we're kind of tracking along with the state performance and local performance. And we seem to be doing that. Nonetheless, we have, again, gone back up to 5% over cumulative through April. And so we're looking, monitoring to see the effect of the news regarding Metropolitan, LADWP, as well as our own stage two, which we will be sending out a drought bulletin here to all customers scheduled, I believe, not this next week, but the week after that, or perhaps the week of the 24th. I'll confirm that. Next slide, please. Okay, actions and next steps. We'll just jump right in here. We only have, I think, one more slide. In April, May, again, State Water Resource Control Board activities, stage two requirement and non-functional turf definition and potential prohibition of potable water irrigation for those areas. So we're looking and watching that closely. Stage two drought bulletin, as I mentioned, that's a very informative bulletin that provides very clear, succinct, easy to understand and to obtain or access information specific to our stage two water shortage ordinance and other conservation activities and programs that we offer to customers that will be sent out to all customers in our service area as a unique mail piece. Also, we're increasing community engagement. Last night we had a virtual drought forum. I gave a talk to COC on Friday at their community sustainability and SCV community conference, and lots of events and lots of increases in engagement and communication on the radar and in play. Drought ready videos have been released and we're developing more. And then of course we have continued performance monitoring and adaptive management so that we can respond to not only drought, our customers' needs, but then also those policies and practices that are embedded in our short-range plan. Next slide, please. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Matt. Cheryl, any questions from members of the public on item 5.2?
There does not appear to be.
Thank you. Then we can move on. Questions or comments from members of the committee for Matt. Director Cooper.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Just a couple of quick ones, Matt. You talked about drip conversion rebates. What are those? Does that include installation, somebody converting over to a drip system? What's included in that?
So there's two tracks, Director Cooper. Thank you for the question. There's two tracks regarding the drip conversion. One is stacking it and combining it with our lawn replacement program, which, you know, again, many people are using spray irrigation for turf and need to convert. And with the landscape they have left and the plants they install, we recommend they install drip irrigation or high efficiency sprinkler nozzles. And so that's one way. But another thing that happens is you might have a lot of non-turf applications or areas at your home or business that are using spray irrigation to cover essentially head-to-head coverage, but they're only watering plants that might comprise or maybe take up about 50% of the area. So you're essentially overwatering by a factor of two to get water to those plants. So if you cap those spray heads and convert that area to drip irrigation, you can get 75 cents per square foot. That reduces the overwatering of the 50% of the area that's not covered, and it helps improve the utility of the plant by putting water right at the plant as opposed to having to cover the entire area.
Okay, so the rebate is 75 cents per square foot of whatever you convert to drip.
That's correct.
Very good. And my other question is, when we're talking about how much rain we've received or how far we are below our normal rain, why are we using calendar year? Because we talk in the water year. We look at October to wherever, which is the water year. So we're not really calculating in that December rain that we had, which is part of our water year. So we're not down 77% when you look at the month of December, which is part of the water year.
We can certainly add that frame, Director Cooper. We look at the calendar year. While we did receive significant rain in December is typically a very low irrigation month. And so the data might be skewed if we were to say December received 10 inches of rain and try to apply that volume to the irrigation demands. Irrigation demands in December are usually around 1 to 2 inches because of the cool temperatures and the precipitation. So what we're looking at now is kind of looking at getting to the irrigation season in that calendar year, which is a little different than the water year. But I think maybe it would be beneficial to help explain both of them because they do have meaning in their own sense. Where the water year, we did see, we're pretty close to on average for the water year, but it's important to note that 80%+ of that came in a month when there's really no irrigation demand. So now you're looking at comparing why in these months, January through April, which are the irrigation season is starting up and we're getting some rains in March and April, that usually supplements and encourages folks to not turn on their sprinklers to take advantage of it. In absence of that, we can see that that's influencing the increase in demand. So I would recommend that we perhaps include both of those data points so that they can be understood in their own context.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that people look at, they like to see what the recharge of the basin is as well. And that December helped recharge the basin, although it didn't do much for irrigation for the rest of the year, but it did help recharge the basin. So, yeah, I think we need to show that as the water year in some respects.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Richard Orzechowski. Mr. Dickinson, the stage two drought bulletin, will that be mailed along with the bills or separate mailer?
Director Orzechowski, that will be a separate mailer.
Is there anything that prevents us to send literature like that along with the bill, the water bill?
We can send information out with the water bill. One of the challenges we have is that about half of our, I want to say last I heard, about more half or perhaps slightly more than half of our customers do not receive a bill. They have electronic billing and perhaps they don't even view the online bill. So our goal was to develop something that was standalone and that had information. It'll have envelope snipes, basically information on the envelope that talks about SCV water, stage two drought, very specific information. So even if you just read the envelope, you'll get some of the basic information that we're trying to promote regarding stage two. But then inside of it is something that's very specific to that. Going forward, I do think we should utilize that medium and that channel of communication strategically.
Okay, understood. Yeah, you're right about that. It's, I think, more of our customers are using their banks to pay their bills. Regarding slide number 13, drought conservation target, I'm looking at the 2020 production and 2022 production, and then the 15%/20% reduction plan, the dashed line, and the dashed line is seems to be a little bit below the 2020 production bar graph. So do you believe that the 2022 productions could, in the next couple of months, May, June, July, meet that dash line? I mean, is that even possible since this is a dry year as opposed to a wet year of 2020?
Thank you, Director Orzechowski. Possibility and probability are two different. it's possible. The probability has yet to be determined. Our goal is to start moving in that direction, moving the needle in that direction. I barring, I think it was 2014, maybe it was 2015, that we had abnormal inch plus rain in July, which we tend not to get. It was a very unique thing, but it really impacted demands and folks really took advantage of that. And we did see a 20-30% decrease, but we have to start stepping down that. And that's, to me, the issue that we're going to be focusing on is getting, moving that direction, getting that trajectory in that trend. But right now, our trend is heading the other direction. So it's possible. Is it probable to get to that dashed line, which is the 15% of that 2020 production, is yet to be determined.
Yeah, that's going to be very difficult. I've noticed through all the slides and through the drought forum yesterday that I guess we're focusing on our on SCV residents to limit their water use outdoors, outside. Is that the number one priority to meet that dash line focus, should I say, to limit outdoor water use?
It's a key component of the coalition, I guess, of savings here. I would say there's other things that are very important. I believe is 88% of our demands were single family residential, multifamily residential, and dedicated irrigation for commercial. So we certainly need to focus on all of those sectors. We've been working with multifamily for some time to get usage down, and it has been trending down. Single family usage has rebounded somewhat due to irrigation, and so we think there's some savings there. But we are working with the large landscape customers to leverage their professional capability and capacity and technological savviness to achieve that 20% reduction. So this is going to be all hands on deck approach, I believe. But you know, the big savings are going to come from residential and dedicated irrigation customers.
Okay. You know, one positive that was passed out on Home and Garden Show, and that I passed out personally on Saturday during the Kids Fish, was those magnets that you guys have created, Watering Days magnets. I don't know if you can see it on the camera, but you know what I'm referring to.
Yes, sir.
Pass them out to the directors. A lot of parents that I spoke with on Saturday would like to just have instructions. What can they do? And I think that magnet is a perfect medium to tell our customers exactly how they can help in conserving water. One of the things that I did not like from yesterday's forum was a lack of clear instructions to our residents on what they can do. And also I ran it by only 2-3 people, so my sample size is small, but you know, what we do as an agency on getting water now and our plans and securing water in the future, you know, was not clearly shown at yesterday's a drought forum. I'm going to get a copy of the PowerPoint presentation and make some notes on it and go ahead and send that to your way. My question is, are we planning to have another drought forum in May or in the next couple of months?
Director Ozerhofsky, it's not my understanding that another virtual drought forum is currently been planned or booked. I could certainly talk to Kathy Martin to see if that's something we can put together. The team did a really great job getting that information, and if there's room for opportunity for improvement, that's always a welcome feedback. I would note that that magnet is very effective. We worked with them to get that, with communications to get that out, and that the drought bulletin that we will be sending out is, I think, very much so very clear to what your comments are. In addition to that, it'll have a section where you can cut out the almost the same information the magnet has and tape that to your irrigation controller. And perhaps we could include magnet distribution in a future mailer. But I think the drought bulletin has a lot of very clear, succinct information. It's one page, two sides, very clear, specific bulletin about drought, what you can do, and what programs SCV Water offers to help you accomplish those goals.
Okay, and then one last comment. During the Q&A session, a lot of residents had questions on what is acceptable, what is not acceptable in terms of using water outside. One of the issues was, you know, fruits and vegetables, watering, you know, large trees, whether that is part of the voluntary water restrictions. Could your team provide some sort of a talking points to our customer service department, if that hasn't been done already, where they, if they get a, you know, a plethora of phone calls asking, you know, what can they do, what they cannot do? They have a several talking points that'll tell them exactly what's acceptable, what's exempt, and so forth.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we can certainly incorporate that and add an addendum that we want to prioritize our valuable trees, and that garden vegetables with hand watering is exempt from those watering restrictions. So yeah, we'll update our talking points to customer care.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
Chair.
Great presentation, Matt. I think all hands on deck is a very good metaphor. And so please keep up the good work. And we look forward to more in the future.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Thank you, members of the committee.
And with that, we'll move to item number 6, which is the committee planning calendar presented by Assistant General Manager Cole.
Yep, the calendar is there for the committee's pleasure. Nothing real specific to point out. We will have the Irvine Ranch Water District short-term agreement coming before the board shortly. So the next meeting. Okay. So we had a little start-stop there, but it's ready to go at this point. So you'll be seeing that.
Okay. Any questions from members of the public on item number 6? Cheryl? Okay.
There are no questions.
Thank you. Then with that, we have, I'm sorry, questions from members of the committee. Details.
Just a quick question, Mr. Cole. For item number 6, that's still on schedule, proposed High Desert Groundwater Banking Program?
I think what we'll do is probably give a presentation of the committee. That project has been delayed. So the High Desert Water Bank is kind of focusing on their first phase of development. I know Dirk has been reaching out to them. I did have a chance at Aqua to talk to Matt Knutson, their assistant general manager. That project is a little bit out further than had been anticipated originally. I don't know, Dirk, if you had anything else you wanted to add on that.
Basically the same thing.
Okay. Are we a month or two away from a presentation?
I think, let me get in touch with Matt and get some direct, you know, idea on the timing of it. One of the things that I'd asked him for is to have another chance for Dirk and I to come out there and sit down with them and do a little tour so that we get a better feeling for where the project is at this point in time.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Welcome.
Other questions or comments from members of the committee on the agenda calendar? Great. Thank you, Steve. Then with that, we have item number 7, which is adjournment. And so we'll call it quits for the night. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, staff, for all the presentations and good information.